Cryptic Canticles welcomes you to the Dracula Radio Play experience. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this full audio performance of Bram Stoker's masterpiece, released chronologically by entry date.
Telegram, Rufus Smith, London, to Lord Godalming, care HBM Vice Consul Varna. Serena Catherine reported entering Galatz at 1 o'clock today.
Dr. Seward's diary, 28 October. When the telegram came announcing the arrival in Galatz, I do not think it was such a shock to any of us as might have been expected. True, we did not know whence or how or when the bolt would come, but I think we all expected that something strange would happen. The day of arrival at Varna made us individually satisfied that things would not be just as we had expected. We only waited to learn where the change would occur. Nonetheless, however, it was a surprise. I suppose that nature works on such a hopeful basis that we believe against ourselves that things will be as they ought to be, not as we should know that they will be. Transcendentalism is a beacon to the angels, even if it be a will-of-the-wisp to man. Van Helsing raised his hand over his head for a moment, as though in remonstrance with the Almighty. But he said not a word, and in a few seconds stood up with his face sternly set. Lord Godalming grew very pale, and sat breathing heavily. I was myself half stunned and looked in wonder at one another. Quincy Morris tightened his belt with that quick movement which I knew so well. In our old wandering days, it meant action. Mrs. Harker grew ghastly white, so that the scar on her forehead seemed to burn, but she folded her hands meekly and looked up in prayer. Harker smiled, actually smiled, the dark, bitter smile of one who is without hope. But at the same time, his action belied his words, for his hands instinctively sought the hilt of the great kukri knife and rested there.
When does the next train start for Galatz?
At 6:30 tomorrow morning.
We all started, for the answer came from Mrs. Harker.
How on earth do you know?
You forget, or perhaps you do not know, though Jonathan does, and so does Dr. Van Helsing, that I am the train friend. At home in Exeter, I always used to make up the timetables, so as to be helpful to my husband. I found it so useful sometimes that I always make a study of the timetables now. I knew that if anything were to take us to Castle Dracula, we should go by Galatz, or at any rate through Bucharest. So I learned the times very carefully. Unhappily, there are not many to learn, as the only train leaves tomorrow, as I say.
Wonderful woman.
Can't we get a special?
Van Helsing shook his head.
I fear not. This land is very different from yours or mine. Even if we did have a special, it would probably not arrive as soon as our regular train. Moreover, we have something to prepare. We must think. Now let us organize. You, friend Arthur, go to the train and get the tickets and arrange that all be ready for us to go in the morning. Do you, friend Jonathan, go to the agent of the ship and get from him letters to the agent in Galatz, with authority to make a search of the ship just as it was here. Quincy Morris, you see the vice consul, and get his aid with his fellow in Galatz and all he can do to make our way smooth, so that no times be lost when over the Danube. John will stay with Madame Mina and me, and we shall consult. For so if time be long, you may be delayed. And it will not matter when the sun set, since I am here with Madame to make report.
And I,
said Mrs. Harker brightly, and more like her old self than she had been for many a long day,
shall try to be of use in all ways, and shall think and write for you as I used to do. Something is shifting from me in some strange way, and I feel freer than I have been of late.
The three young men looked happier at the moment, as they seemed to realize the significance of her words. But Van Helsing and I, turning to each other, met each a grave and troubled glance. We said nothing at the time, however. When the three men had gone out to their tasks, Van Helsing asked Mrs. Harker to look up the copy of the diaries and find him the part of Harker's journal at the castle. She went away to get it. When the door was shut upon her, he said to me,
"We mean the same. Speak out."
"Here is some change. It is a hope that makes me sick, for it may deceive us."
"Quite so. Do you know why I asked her to get the manuscript?"
"No, unless it was to get an opportunity of seeing me alone.
You are in part right, friend John, but only in part. I want to tell you something. No, my friend, I am taking a terrible risk, but I believe it is right. In the moment when Madame Mina said those words that arrest both our understanding, an inspiration came to me. In the trance of 3 days ago, the Count sent her his spirit to read her mind. Or more like he took her to see him in his earth box in the ship, with water rushing, just as it go free at rise and set of sun. He learns then that we are here, for she have more to tell in her open life, with eyes to see, ears to hear, than he, shut as he is in his coffin box. Now he make his most effort to escape us. At present, he want her not. He is sure, with his so great knowledge, that she will come at his call. But he cut her off, take her, as he can do out of his own power, that so she come not to him. Ah, there I have hope that our man brains, that have been of man so long, and that have not lost the grace of God, will come higher than his child brains that lie in his tomb for centuries, that grow not yet to our stature, and that do only work selfish and therefore small. Ah, here come Madame Mina, not averred to her of her trance. She knows it not, and it would overwhelm her and make despair just when we want all her hope, all her courage, when most we want all her great brain, which is trained like a man's brain, but is of sweet woman and have a special power which the Count give her, and which he may not take away altogether, though he think not so. Hush, let me speak, and you shall learn. Oh, John, my friend, we are in awful straits. I fear as I never feared before. We can only trust the good God. Silence. Here she comes.
I thought that the professor was going to break down and have hysterics, just as he had when Lucy died. But with a great effort, he controlled himself and was at perfect nervous poise when Mrs. Harker tripped into the room, bright and happy-looking and, in the doing of work, seemingly forgetful of her misery. As she came in, she handed a number of sheets of typewriting to Van Helsing. He looked over them gravely, his face brightening up as he read. Then, holding the pages between his finger and thumb, he said,
"Friend John, to you with so much experience already, and you too, dear Madame Mina, that are young, here is a lesson. Do not fear ever to think. A half-thought has been buzzing often in my brain, but I fear to let him loose his wings. Here now, with more knowledge, I go back to where that half-thought come from, and I find that he be no half-thought at all. That be a whole thought, so young that he is not yet strong to use his little wings. Nay, like the ugly duck of my friend Hans Andersen, he be no duck thought at all, but a big swan thought that sail nobly on big wings when the time come for him to try them. See, I read here what Jonathan have written. That other of his race who, in a later age, again and again, brought his forces over the great river into Turkey land, who when he was beaten back came again, and again and again. So he had come alone from the bloody field where his troops were being slaughtered, since he knew that he alone could ultimately triumph. What does this tell us? Not much? No. The Count's child thought see nothing, therefore he speaks so free. Your man thought see nothing. My man thought see nothing. Till just now. No. But there comes another word from someone who speak without thought, because she, too, know not what it mean, what it might mean. Just as there are elements which rest, yet when in nature's course they move on their way and they touch, the poof! And there comes a flash of light, heaven-wide, that blind and kill and destroy some. But that show up all earth below for leagues and leagues. Is it not so? Well, I shall explain. To begin, have you ever studied the philosophy of crime? Yes and no? You, John, yes, for it is a study of insanity. You, no, Madame Mina, for crime touch you not but once. Still, your mind works true and argues not a particulari ad universale. There is this peculiarity in criminals. It is so constant in all countries and at all times that even police, who know not much from philosophy, come to know it empirically. That it is. That is to be empiric. The criminal always work at one crime. That is a true criminal who seems predestined to crime, and who will of none other. This criminal has not full man brain. He is clever and cunning and resourceful, but he be not of man stature as to brain. He be of child brain in much. Now, this criminal of ours is predestined to crime also. He too have child brain, and it is of the child to do what he have done. The little birds, the little fish, the little animal learn not by principle but empirically. And when he learn to do, then there is to him the ground to start from to do more. Dos pusto, said Archimedes. Give me a fulcrum, and I shall move the world. To do once is a fulcrum whereby child brain become man brain. And until he have the purpose to do more, he continued to do the same again every time, just as he have done before. Oh, my dear, I see that your eyes are opened, and that to use a lightning flash show all the leagues.
For Mrs. Harker began to clap her hands, and her eyes sparkled.
Now you shall speak. Tell us two dry men of science what you see with so bright eyes.
He took her hand and held it whilst he spoke. His finger and thumb closed on her pulse, as I thought instinctively and unconsciously, as she spoke.
The Count is a criminal and of criminal type. Nordo and Lombroso would so classify him, and qua criminal he is of some imperfectly formed mind. Thus, in a difficulty, he has to seek resource and habit. His past is a clue, and the one page of it that we know tells that once before, when in what Mr. Morris would call a tight place, he went back to his own country from the land he had tried to invade, and thence, without losing purpose, prepared himself for a new effort. He came again better equipped for his work, and won. So he came to London to invade a new land. He was beaten, and when all hope of success was lost, and his existence in danger, he fled back over the sea to his home, just as formerly he had fled back over the Danube from Turkeyland.
Good, oh, you so clever lady!
Said Van Helsing enthusiastically as he stooped and kissed her hand. A moment later he said to me, as calmly as though we had been having a sick room consultation,
72 only, and in all this excitement, I have hope.
Turning to her again, he said with keen expectation,
But go on. There is more to tell if you will. Be not afraid, John and I know. I do in any case, and I shall tell you if you are right. Speak. Without fear.
I will try to, but you will forgive me if I seem too egotistical.
Nay, fear not. You must be egotist, for it is of you that we think.
Then, as he is criminal, he is selfish, and his intellect is small, and his action is based on selfishness. So he confines himself to one purpose. That purpose is remorseless. As he fled back over the Danube, leaving his forces to be cut to pieces, so now he is intent on being safe, careless of all. So his own selfishness frees my soul somewhat from the terrible power which he acquired over me on that dreadful night. I felt it. Oh, I felt it. Thank God for his great mercy. My soul is freer than it has been since that awful hour, and all that haunts me is a fear lest in some trance or dream he may have used my knowledge for his ends.
The professor stood up.
He has so used your mind. And by it, he has left us here in Varna, whilst the ship that carried him rushed through enveloping fog up to Galatz, where doubtless he had made preparation for escaping from us. But his child mind only saw so far. And it may be that, as ever in God's providence, the very thing that this evildoer most reckoned for his selfish good turns out to be his chiefest harm. The hunter is taken in his own snare, as the great psalmist says. For now that he think he is free from every trace of us all, and that he has escaped us with so many hours to him, then his selfish child brain will whisper him to sleep. He think, too, that as he cut himself off from knowing your mind, there can be no knowledge of him to you. There is where he fail. The terrible baptism of blood which he give you makes you free to go to him in spirit, as you have as yet done in your times of freedom when the sun rise and set. At such times you go by my volition and not by his. And this power to good of you and others you have won from your suffering at his hands. This is now all more precious that he know it not, and to guard himself have even cut himself off from his knowledge of our ware. We, however, are not selfish, and we believe that God is with us through all this blackness and these many dark hours. We shall follow him and we shall not flinch, even if we peril ourselves that we become like him. Friend John, this has been a great hour, and it hath done much to advance us on our way. You must be scribe and write him all down, so that when the others return from their work, you can give it to them. Then they shall know as we do.
And so I have written it whilst we wait their return, and Mrs. Harker has written with the typewriter all since she brought the manuscript to us.
You have been listening to Bram Stoker's Dracula, the radio play, as presented by the Cryptic Canticles. Stay tuned for our next episode at crypticcanticles.com.